This is Relevant in Rome, a weekly podcast from the Vatican with Relevant Radio Rome correspondent Ashley Nerona. Now here's the latest on Pope Francis and all that's happened in Rome this week.
Bom dia from here in Portugal, and it is just a gift to be here in Europe where we have the opportunity to just zip to another country for a conference. My husband John and I are here for just that very reason, and wonderful to be in the land of Our Lady of Fatima as well as the land of Saint Anthony. And I have to tell you, we Italians, we think we've kind of hijacked Saint Anthony because he is most commonly known as Saint Anthony of Padova in Italy. And that is because, of course, where he is entombed and where he served most of the years of his life. But he was born right here in Lisbon in the 18th century. Not many people realize that. In fact, John, his parents were nobility, and his wealthy family had him instructed at the local cathedral school. But then already, can you imagine, at the age of 15, he knew and he entered the Augustinian community. And it was there when after he was ordained an Augustinian priest, that he became of hospitality there for the Augustinians and at the abbey in which he was living. And a group of Franciscan friars arrived one night, and he was so taken with them, with their stories, with their simple evangelical lifestyles. And of course, at this time, the Franciscan order had been founded only 11 years before that. And news came to Anthony that 5 Franciscans had recently been beheaded in Morocco, and he was just so inspired by the example of their life and their courage that he decided to become a Franciscan. And so tomorrow, my husband John and I will have the opportunity to visit the Shrine of St. Anthony, the Shrine of St. Anthony that is built on his birthplace. So we are very much looking forward to that too. I have a lot to thank him for in so many ways. And he was actually one of my 2 patron saints, John. When I was a young lady and understood that I was being called to the vocation of marriage, I prayed to St. Joseph and to St. Anthony to find me my husband. I figured St. Joseph was the perfect father and husband, and St. Anthony was really good at finding stuff. So I just put it in their hands, and John, you can imagine my delight when I learned that my husband had been educated at St. Anthony Elementary School and St. Joseph High School.
Wow.
So indeed, my
no coincidences.
I prepared him.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I have lots to thank him for tomorrow, and I will bring your prayers. I will bring the prayers of our Relevant Radio family.
You know, we talked about St. Anthony, but I know being just literally less than an hour away from Fatima, I just, anytime you go to Portugal, I can't help but think of the beautiful Cova d'Iria and the Shrine of Our Lady of Fatima that we just recently celebrated the anniversary of the miracle of the sun. Wow. Any chance you could take a ride over and visit that place while you're there?
Yeah. So my husband John and I are going to do our best. We have a short amount of time, and we want to make sure we leave enough time for Fatima. So if we don't make it on this trip, we're going to do it on the next. And as you and I got to chat about last week, I've had the blessing of being there. It was such a pivotal point in my faith life to make pilgrimage to Fatima. But my husband John hasn't been there, so I'm very excited to introduce that to him. And so
he's going to love it. He's
going to
absolutely love it.
Yes,
it's so moving. My goodness. I just watched this 2-hour movie on Fatima Saturday night with my mom. I was riveted. I just I couldn't leave because it was just so incredibly inspiring. And so that's a whole nother show that we could do, Ashley. But anyway, today, this morning in Rome, there was another Papal Wednesday audience as per the usual. Your thoughts on the main message of Pope Francis this morning?
Yes. So today, sure enough, in the Paul VI audience hall, the Pope held his weekly catechesis, and this week reflected on the book of Galatians, chapter 5, verses 13 to 14. And so, as per usual, that the passage that is going to be focused on for the day is read in various languages. And the theme of today's passage was that Christians shouldn't abuse the freedom that they've been given from Christ, but they should instead become slaves to one another through love. But something very interesting and unusual happened today, John, because as those verses were being read this morning in German, a little boy, he's wearing a black tracksuit, he had glasses on, and just kind of inconspicuous, came out of the crowd, walked up, approached the Pope. The Pope smiled at him, clasped that little boy's hand. And then the regent of the prefecture of the papal household, who sits on the Pope's right, his name is Monsignor Leonardo Sapienza, he just immediately stood up and gave that little boy his seat. And the child sat there. He looked around. He then pointed at the Pope's zucchetto, the little white hat that the Pope wears. And he actually then took the priest, who was currently reading the gospel in the message in Portuguese, he took him over to the Pope, pointed at that skull cap, the white skull cap that the Pope was wearing. And the Pope indeed gave it to him, and the little boy turned and walked down from the platform in the front of the that arena, and he was now wearing his own zucchetto. So it was a very interesting moment, and the
wow.
Pope took that moment. Yeah.
It's like unbelievable.
Not the typical Wednesday audience.
Wow.
Yes.
It reminds me of our Lord's famous words, "Let the little children come to me." The Holy Father literally did it.
Exactly. You got it. And it was really interesting because that's exactly what Pope Francis thought of when that happened, because he went off script at that point and started talking about what had just occurred right before his very eyes, because he said, okay, yes, we're talking about the freedom of faith from the letter of Galatians, but he said, you know, I was reminded of what Jesus was saying about the spontaneity and the freedom of children. Because when he said, when this child had the freedom to approach him, to move as if this little boy were just at home, he said, this is like when Jesus says, you too, if you do not behave like children, you will not enter the kingdom of heaven. And so Pope Francis called this little boy an example of courage to approach the Lord, that kind of courage that we should all have to approach the Lord, to be able to be open to the Lord, to be not afraid. And the Pope even thanked that little boy for the lesson that he had given today, and asked everyone to pray, especially that the Lord help this little boy in his growth, because he really has given a testimony, as the Pope said, that came from his heart. Because Pope Francis said children don't have an automatic translator from the heart to life, but the heart is what takes the lead. And so he asked all the faithful to be inspired by seeking the freedom of God's children, John.
Very fascinating story. And the Holy Father, you know, obviously being able to react immediately to this unusual mm-hmm. situation and use it as a teaching moment to teach us about true freedom. In reading some of the different accounts, Ashley, I also saw that the Holy Father said that something is missing from the modern idea of freedom, which I thought was interesting.
Yes, exactly. He said that in the modern idea of freedom, many people consider only their own personal freedom and not that of others, but that authentic freedom means also looking at what is the best for others and not only at that myopic, individualistic view, as he called it. So that was really the way that he managed to tie in that theme of freedom from Galatians, because he said that gift of freedom that comes from Jesus, well, that freedom does not mean keeping away from others, but it actually means understanding that there's a social dimension that comes with freedom that is fundamental to Christians. And that, of course, leads to the common good. And so it was incredible the way that these little boys' actions were able to really illustrate what that message was all about today.
Well, Ashley, turning to other news, can you give us an update on the ruling that the Vatican cannot be sued by abuse victims in the European courts?
Yeah, you know, John, that's really been a very interesting case. And the case, believe it or not, was opened back in 2011. So it's something that we've had our eyes on for a long time. But this ruling has just come down from the European Court of Human Rights. And what they have decided is that the Vatican cannot be sued in European courts because it is a sovereign state. So this was a case that was brought about by survivors of abuse by Catholic clergy. And it was the European Court of Human Rights' first case to deal with the immunity of the Holy See. So it was especially interesting for Vatican watchers. And the group that filed the charges were 24 Belgian, French, and Dutch abuse survivors. And they had attempted to sue the Holy See and Catholic Church leaders starting in the Belgian courts in 2011. And it was because of cover-ups that had happened. It was because abusers had been moved around without the information being shared or any appropriate action being taken. And so with that said, what happened was first in Belgium, when they opened this case, the Belgian court said they did not have any jurisdiction to rule over the Vatican. So then these people said, well, where do we go? Who does have jurisdiction? That's what led them to the European Court of Human Rights. And they actually, they argued that they had been denied the right of access to a court under Article 6 of the European Convention on Human Rights. So they asked for €10,000 per person in compensation because of the policy of silence on the issue of sex abuse. And that was denied, saying that the Vatican is a sovereign state. It cannot be sued. And the court agreed, with the Belgian court also adopting that position. So this, of course, it's very interesting also to hear the position of the survivors, who are saying that, you know, we were victimized first by these clergy, and now we've been victimized by the court. And this is all on the heels of that landmark French report that has just come out that said that Catholic clergy sexually abused about 216,000 minors over the past 70 years. And so with that said, when the report came out, Pope Francis called it a moment of shame. In France, they came to understand that about 4% of all sexual violence was happening within the church. And so in this case, the victims are saying that this is, to quote, he said, a galling reminder of the Vatican's impunity, which allows it to evade justice. So a very difficult situation, a very interesting situation, but this is not the end, because they can appeal within 3 months. So we'll certainly keep an eye on what happens here as we continue to pray for the healing of the suffering of these victims, John.
And meanwhile, there was another ceremony this month, on I believe on the 16th, remembering the 77th anniversary of Jews taken from Rome to death camps. What was that event like?
Yes, in fact, so actually between 1943 and 1944, there was a nine-month Nazi occupation of Rome. And every year on that day, it is remembered the date of deportation of Jews. About more than 1,000, actually, were taken from the Jewish quarter of Rome and brought to Auschwitz. They were first told that if they managed to offer a certain amount of gold, then they would be spared. And so the community got together and they gathered all the gold within the community that they could. They did not reach the amount that had been requested, so they went to the churches and they went to the Vatican, who then supplied the remaining amount. And that was turned over to the Nazis, but That didn't make a difference because, indeed, they still came and managed to take 1,024 Roman Jews. That included 200 children, and they were rounded up and taken away to Auschwitz. Now, 16 of them did make it back to Rome alive, the last of whom died in 2018. So this is the third year that we are celebrating this anniversary without any of those 16 living survivors. So what has happened is that this day is commemorated in a special way. There's a Catholic family from Germany. Actually, we go to the same church that they do, and they have started a special commemoration program every year. So they gather people together first in St. Peter's Square, and then they walk. They walk all the way to the Jewish Quarter of Rome, commemorating the steps that were taken by those people who were rounded up. And also, afterwards, they have a beautiful music concert, they share poetry, and they have an art exhibit to commemorate this horrific event and to pray that nothing like this would ever happen again, John.
There's been some celebrations in Rome in recent days. In fact, there's celebrations going on today for the Feast of St. Paul of the Cross, St. Luke yesterday, and over the weekend, St. Ignatius of Antioch. Tell us about a few of these celebrations.
Oh, all kinds of wonderful, special things to celebrate. St. Ignatius of Antioch actually went to his death in the Colosseum in Rome. Not many people realize that. And he was taken all the way from Antioch to Rome. And, of course, along the way wrote that famous letter to the Romans about how he was willing to give himself as a sacrifice. He begged the people, if you have connections, don't save me. I'm ready to be a martyr. He said that, listen to me now while I'm in a state of reason versus right before when I'm under duress, right before my martyrdom, and I say, please save me. He says, no, I'm ready to be ground up. So using this incredible Eucharistic language. And so right above the door through which he would have entered into the Colosseum, there is a cross there. And so that is a place that on his feast day, pilgrims come with candles to pray and to in special thanksgiving of St. Ignatius of Antioch and his sacrifice of his life. And then, John, you mentioned St. Luke. And on the feast day of St. Luke, this is also the feast of doctors. He is the patron saint of doctors, being a doctor himself. And on that day, Pope Francis said specifically that Catholic healthcare has to be called to bear witness to human dignity because he said we're living in a throwaway culture. And on that day, pilgrims went especially to the church of Sant'Agostino, St. Augustine, here in Rome. And the beautiful altarpiece above the tabernacle was actually an icon that is said to have been written by the hand of St. Luke himself. In an iconography, we always use the word written because it's the idea of writing a theology right there onto the wood. And the idea, imagine this, it says St. Luke there when after the death of Christ, as he was writing his gospel, almost, we could say interviewing Our Lady, right? Learning from her, taking stories from her. He would have written that icon right there on the very wood of the carpentry table of Joseph and Jesus. So on his feast day, this is a special place where pilgrims go and pray in Rome. And then St. Paul of the Cross, John, you mentioned his feast is today. Well, it's amazing. It couldn't tie more perfectly in with the gospel today because, of course, St. Paul is the founder of the Passionists. And even if we look at his name, Paul of the Cross, he promoted the merits of the participation in the Passion and the beauty in God's plan for salvation through the cross. And the feast day ties perfectly in with today's reading in Romans 6, right? Not being conformed to the world by being slaves of sin, but being slaves of righteousness. And how can we do that? By clinging to the cross. And every time that we are able to celebrate the Eucharist, we are there mystically at the foot of the cross. And then in today's Gospel of Luke, Luke reminded us, it's a bit alarming, right? We don't know the minute, we don't know the hour, but it will come like a thief in the night. So what do we have to do? We have to stay close to the cross of Christ, and then we have nothing to fear, because he told us if we eat his flesh and drink his blood, he will raise us up on the last day. And so to celebrate the feast of St. Paul at the cross, John, he is entombed here in Rome at the Church of San Giovanni Apollo, St. John and Paul. And there they have been having 3 days of celebration, special masses, vespers, special rosaries. But it all culminates today when the Passionists will actually go up the holy steps of Rome on their knees in devotion, especially to St. Paul, and to be connected to the Passion of Christ. So the holy stairs are the stairs that Christ himself would have walked up to meet Pontius Pilate. Imagine that his sweat, his blood would have touched those very stairs. So an incredible way to be connected to the Passion on this very special day, John.
Relevant in Rome is your weekly connection to the Vatican. Listen to live reports from Rome with Ashley Narona every Wednesday morning at 7:30 Eastern, 6:30 Central on Morning Air. And listen right here next week to Relevant in Rome for the latest on Pope Francis and news from the Vatican.